Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
At this point, I don't think so. I have three little kids. I love the work I'm doing. I also love being able to spend time with my kids. But I do have a message that I want the Democrats to listen to.
That's my personal opinion, and I stand by that, ma'am.
Yes, and I think a lot of people feel that same way. But that feeling, lock them up permanently in the dark, is not constitutional.
They're saying, we don't care that the voters passed an initiative that said we have to do structured English immersion, we can't do dual language, but we're going to do it anyway. And you have the irony of a governor and an attorney general who are supporting lawlessness. It's unbelievable.
I have no idea why the federal government and the Trump administration in particular thought this was a good idea, but it's a terrible idea. And I want those DEA agents back.
Well, for starters, we need to get all those that came here during the last 4 years, get them back out of the country.
People are not hiding. They are being taken out of their homes when they're contributing to our communities.
And with me to talk about the calls for a pair of school board members to step down after a security incident at a Valley High School, Senator Ruben Gallego addressing his presidential aspirations and more, are Chip Scutari of SNC Communications. Good morning, Chip.
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. And Carl Gentles of the Gentles Agency. Carl, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, guys, let's start with this story out of Maryvale High School, where the allegation is that two members of a school board that where the school sort of feed into to that to the Phoenix Union High School District brought a box cutter through security or tried to. One of them filmed it as a way to test security. This, of course, comes after there was a stabbing at Maryvale High School not that long ago in which a student died, was killed by stabbing. Chip, this just seems like a bizarre story. People calling for these school board members to step down. One of them is a member of the legislature. This seems like a lot.
Yeah, this is bizarre with a capital B. And, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But if it is true, it shows a huge lack of judgment, common sense on State Rep Lydia Hernandez. Apparently her daughter was with her as well. There's two completely different versions of this incident, one from Phoenix Union and one from the two Hernandez, Lydia and her daughter, Cassandra. So the police are going to launch an investigation. Mark, you grew up in Connecticut. I grew up in New Jersey. There's a famous New York City sports broadcaster, Warner Wolf.
Yep.
And his catchphrase was, let's go to the videotape.
Yeah.
So this videotape is going to show who's telling the truth, who's lying, and if Representative Hernandez is lying, it will look really, really bad.
Does this, Carl, do you think, assuming that it is true, and of course, as Chip said, innocent until proven guilty, we don't really know, we weren't there, we don't know exactly what happened, but if this went down the way that Phoenix Union says it went down, should they be stepping down? Should the Hernandez mother and daughter be stepping down?
Well, they are innocent until proven guilty, but the evidence at this point, or at least the allegations, don't look very good for them. This is just complete, I think, stupidity on behalf of people that should know better. At least one of them should have known better. And so, like Chip said, there's video. Once that video is reviewed, it's going to show. I mean, the evidence in the video is going to basically say who's telling the truth. And so the bigger, I should step back and say that what should not be lost is that a young student lost his life over this issue, and then you've got these two board members that are politicizing basically and doing basically put a stunt to try and prove a point by breaking the law, which they are supposed to be overseeing and enforcing. And so let's not forget, number one, that there's a student that was in a family that's in mourning here. But these two have to be held accountable if, in fact, that they are shown to not be telling the truth.
Chip, is the besides the fact of what they did, and their story seems to be that they were trying to test security. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, it seems like security worked. Like they tried to bring a box cutter into the school and they were caught. How problematic do you find the timing of this? Just a very short time after this stabbing incident where, as Carl referenced, a student died.
Oh, it's horrible. It's just horrible all the way around. Why you would think that you're going to act as a police or security guard to try to sneak box cutters into a district that just had a tragic event, a week or two before that. It's just, it's awful, and I don't get it. Unfortunately, Cartwright School District has kind of become a district of drama for all the wrong reasons.
Which is the board that the two Hernandezes sit on,
right. And it's putting, Democrats in the headlines for all the wrong reasons, and that's why I think Phoenix City Council members, at least a few of them, have called for these women to resign. And I don't blame them, but just to think, who would just stop for a second and think, I'm going to try to sneak in a box cutter to a high school that just had a tragic event a week or two before. It's absolutely insane and stupid.
Yeah, Carl, I'm curious what your take is on the response of other elected Democrats. Chip referenced a couple of Phoenix City Council members, called on them to step down from the school board. Legislative Democrats have not really come to their colleagues' defense on this.
Well, it's hard to, it's hard to defend the indefensible is really what it comes down to, right? And the condemnation has been widespread across all political spectrums. I haven't seen not one person stand up and say, oh, this was a good idea. And so, when things, it doesn't matter what political party you're in, when you do stupid things, consequences are going to occur. And in this case, if they are proven, like we said, innocent until proven guilty, if it shows that the story is not what she says, then they should be removed. They should resign. I think the broader thing here is this, that we have really good school board members. And people work hard on school boards for all the right reasons, representing our families, our students, and trying to advance education in this state. There are some that are on school boards for not those reasons. And in some cases, school boards are a launching pad for people's political careers. In this case, it might be a killer of a political career going forward.
Interesting.
One other thing we have talked about on the show, months and months, how politics now is not all national. It's not local. And unfortunately, as Carl said, this is a political stunt. It was performative. I almost think they're trying to take a page out of the Trump playbook. But it blew up in their face. They're trying to make a big deal of it. They're trying to be clever, trying to get clicks and headlines. And it's just, if it's true, it was a really dumb thing to do.
Carl, let me ask you about one of our U.S. senators, Ruben Gallego. There's been a lot of speculation about whether he might be looking to run for president in 2028. He's been traveling to Iowa and Pennsylvania and, early states, swing states. This week he said, probably not. He referenced he has three young kids. But he did say, I have a message that I want my party to understand. Look at what we did during his campaign, we being him, during his campaign last year. And that is maybe the way the Democrats can get back on track here. I want to ask, first off, do you believe that he is not planning to run for president? And two, do you think that his message is one that Democrats across the country should be listening to?
I do believe that Senator Gallego has aspirations beyond the U.S. Senate. I think he's right that now may not be the right time, given the age of his kids, and really, I think what is occurring here is what he's doing is right, which is he is helping the Democratic Party to rebrand itself, reposition itself, because I think. In many cases, the electorate thinks the Democratic Party has lost their way, and their message of standing up for working families is just not resonating. And that has been captured by the opposite party. So I do believe him when he says that. Now, he's acting like a presidential candidate. He's been to Iowa. He went and took a look at the butter,
sculptures.
Butter sculptures, the cow out there, whatever it is. He did that. So he checked that box off. Number one, he went to New Hampshire. He went to Pennsylvania.
Yep.
He's been across this country. But I think what he's doing is the exact right strategy, which is that the Democratic Party has a brand problem and has a message problem and has to do something that's going to reshape people's thought about the Democratic Party. Look, and he is hitting on issues that are not necessarily seen as Democratic strongholds. immigration, tough on immigration, tough on crime law enforcement. He is hitting on things that traditionally people think of on the Republican side. And I think he's doing the exact right thing. When he came out, he was heavily criticized when he first got into the Senate, heavily criticized for some of the positions he took.
Yeah.
But I think it's been a real strategy for him to reshape himself and reshape the Democratic Party.
And I think, you know, Carl and I are both in the communications business. And whether Senator Gallego is doing this on purpose or not, I think he is. We're still talking about him.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant on his part because it's all upside. And I think he's just showing some deft political maneuvering. We don't know when, you know, 2028 rolls around, the campaign. You got to catch lightning in a bottle, whether you're Barack Obama or Donald Trump. You have to just seize the moment. Now, you don't wait your turn anymore like 15, 20 years ago. And I think what Senator Gallego brings to the Democrat brand that maybe others don't is he's a pugilist. He'll fight it out. He'll mix it up. He's got some gravitas there, and he's not afraid to take some swings and a counterpunch. And I think that the Democratic Party needs more of that.
Do you think, though, Chip, is his message the right one for Democrats nationally to be adopting?
You know, I think a lot of it is. I think when, I give him kudos as a Republican when he's saying that, the Democrats have gotten immigration wrong. They've been soft on border security, and it really hurt President Biden, obviously Kamala Harris. So I think when you can do some self-reflection like that and be honest, I think people that resonates, especially with independents and Democrats and maybe some moderate Republicans. So I think he's on the right track.
Yeah, I think Chip is right. People love two things about Ruben, Senator Gallego. One is that he's a fighter. Number two, well, I'd say three things. Well, three of maybe four or five things. But
the list keeps getting longer.
That's right. That's right. As it keeps coming. But secondly, he has won at every single level he has ever attempted, every single one. And this, the pathway, the roadway for him is leading towards this. He started Phoenix City Council, I believe, and then went to the—
He was in the State House.
State House, and then he went, of course, to Congress, and now he's a senator. And so, he's got this roadmap that is leading there. Now, whether that's his 20, 28, or 32, we'll see. But to Chip's point, you do have to strike when lightning is there. And I think it is right now for him. But I think more importantly, I think he's looking towards these midterms and making sure he does everything he can to help Democrats retake the House.
Sure. Chip, we are obviously a very long way away from actual votes being cast, just a little less than a year for the primary. But just yesterday, there was a new poll that on the GOP gubernatorial race that showed Karen Taylor Robeson leading Andy Biggs by about 10 points. Robeson had 37%, 27% favored Biggs. 36% said they're not sure, which obviously, not surprising this far out. This seems to go a little bit against sort of the conventional wisdom that we've heard on this show and others that Biggs would have a not easy path, but not a lot of folks thought that Biggs would have a difficult time winning the GOP primary. At least right now, based on this poll, that would not seem to be the case.
Yeah, it is surprising. I have not seen the crosstabs. I know Mike Noble did the poll. I'll be interested to see when other polls come out, in future months.
Mm-hmm.
But it is surprising. I think a lot can change. Ms. Robeson has a lot of money. She's getting out there and doing ads and crisscrossing the state, from what I hear, doing a lot of stuff. So I think Congressman Biggs really needs to get his name ID out there. He's been in East Valley his whole career, so he doesn't have broad appeal to other parts of the state. I do think in that same poll that Governor Hobbs was leading by—
She had a two-point lead. The numbers were different, but a two-point lead over both Karen Taylor Robeson and Andy Biggs.
Yeah, and the one thing I'd be skeptical about the poll is, how is it tracking the MAGA vote? People aren't paying attention now. The big thing that's going to could determine how this primary works in 2026 is not a presidential year, obviously. So a lot of those MAGA hardcore voters who really like the President Trump may not come out and vote. So that could be a play that could be hard to poll right now. And we'll see how that plays out over the next year or so.
Carl, what do you make of these numbers, both in terms of Taylor Robeson having a 10-point lead, the large number of undecideds, and the fact that Hobbs, at least right now, has a narrow lead over both?
Well, I think Hobbs can count that as a win right now, even though it's just 2 points. And, you know, from her perspective, I'm sure she hopes that's going to grow. But, I take a little bit of a different approach. I think Karen Taylor Robeson has had some extraordinary name ID here in the state with, you know, Arizona voters statewide. And she spent a ton of money, as Chip has said, a ton of money. And she's going to spend more. Biggs is in Congress, narrowly in Mesa, doing his thing, although he's on the MAGA side. So I think Taylor Robeson's edge is because of the amount of time that she's spent over the last, 4 years, almost 6 years now.
And since she ran for
since
ran
she
for
ran
governor
the
last
first
time.
Yeah. And so it doesn't surprise me that she has a lead, even though Biggs is considered more MAGA than she is. And in fact, I think, Chip, if I'm correct, didn't the president endorse both of them? So, yeah. He's
unconditional got, support
he did,
for two
he did,
people.
Yeah.
Unconditional
yeah, yeah.
support.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really surprise me, although I know other people here sitting here have been surprised.
You know, one other thing I was surprised, when Congressman Biggs voted against releasing the Epstein files, which has become, a huge story over the last month or so. I thought Karen would kind of differentiate herself and say, let's have full transparency here. She didn't, because she doesn't want to lose the support of the president. So she's going to have to find ways to be different than Andy Biggs. He's, a hardcore MAGA person. She has to find ways to keep that MAGA base intact, yet reach out to moderate and just kind of pro-business Republicans if she wants to expand her tent.
I want to ask each of you just briefly on this, irrespective of whoever wins. Do either of you think the margin will ultimately be 10 points, or will it be closer?
I think it'll be much, much closer. In the primary, you're talking
about. In the primary, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be much closer. It will close without question.
Okay. And presumably that 36% that's undecided, that's sort of where the candidates kind of have to go at this point, right?
Well, I mean, we're 18 months out, so there's an awful lot of time. And I'm sure Mr. Biggs is going to gin up his efforts as a result of this poll and what he's experiencing. But I think there's still a lot more time. The polls will get narrow.
Yeah. The other thing that could throw a wrench in it is, Congressman Schweiker has said he's exploring a run. A lot of people say it was a play for money and a play for a more national platform. We'll see. But if he got into this primary, that would really shake things up.
Yeah.
I mean, with a three-way primary, that would be wild.
And in theory, we should know that. In the not too distant future, he'd said, he wouldn't take too long to make that
decision.
Supposedly,
I've heard on down low, or not down low, just in the grapevine, through the grapevines, that in a couple of weeks he'll make a decision.
Okay, all right. Well, then we will know.
Yeah.
So, guys, let's talk about the State Department of Education, which accidentally released a bunch of identifying information on families who are the recipients of ESAs, basically school vouchers. They were published online briefly before they were taken down. This is something that Tom Horn has apologized for, the superintendent. His primary opponent, Kimberly Yee, has gone on the offensive about this. Chip, does this become a big issue for Horn in the primary, or a big campaign issue, do you think?
I think the treasurer, Kimberly Yee, will make it the issue in the primary about how Tom Horn, the current school superintendent, is not sufficiently promoting, celebrating, doing everything he can for the ESA voucher program.
Does this become part of it, though, the accidental release of
sure.
personal data?
Absolutely. It's tailor-made for Kimberly Yee. Now, part of why I became a Republican is because, we want accountability, we want transparency, we want fiscal, especially fiscal accountability. And it seems like with this program, there is a serious lack of accountability, whether you like it or not. I think as Republicans, we should want to tighten it up and make it more, it's focused on public schools, mm-hmm. K through 12, getting if you need the vouchers or whatever, focus on school educational needs. But a lot of these stories that keep coming out about lingerie and ski trips and other things, like, I don't remember, paying for lingerie in high school for my high school back in New Jersey, but maybe I missed out on it. So, yeah.
I think we'll leave that comment there. Carl, does this become a big issue? Obviously, ESAs and, this issue is a big one in the primary between Kimberly and Tom Horn. I wonder how much you think this accidental release of information becomes part of that, or is this just sort of another kind of turn of the screw in the debate between the two candidates over ESAs, and should there be guardrails? Should there be any auditing of any of that kind of thing?
Of course, it's going to be part of the campaign. And if you're a consultant on the other side and you don't use it, you're just it's that's malpractice. So and you know, this ESA program is just the gift that keeps on giving for people that are in opposition to it, because it's just one thing after another after another. Like my good friend here said, you know, people are buying, you know, lingerie and all kinds of foolishness on money that's supposed to be spent on education. And if you recall, Tom Horn said that you can submit anything up to $2,000 and we won't question you. So on my estimation,
they go back after and audit.
Do they?
Yeah.
Okay. So then they took the fleecing of me for $2,000 out of it. Okay. All right. So I'll accept that for now, but I would use it. Absolutely. The challenge is that, you know, this program doesn't seem to have any oversight or accountability. And that's the main issue here. And that's an administrative issue. But I think that's something that Tom Horn and the department really has to look at, because he is charged with the administrative duties of the Department of Education, and apparently he's not doing a very good job of that.
But interestingly, that is the concern that Kimberly Yee and other supporters of her have, is that Horn is being he's not letting enough through, that he's being, I think Jake Hoffman referred to him as the single greatest threat to the ESA program because of trying to crack down on some of those purchases that generate a lot of controversy.
You know, I guess this is not a beholder, but I would say that, look, you're the administrator that is assigned to oversee this program, and the program continues to be riddled with issues. And so the question is the program doing what it's supposed to, which, you know, in many cases, and I think in many perspectives, it's not. And so what is it that Mr. Horn and his team is going to do to rein this all in? They're having challenges with release of information. They're having challenges with keeping track on what's being spent. They're having a multitude of challenges. And all the while, the money that's being supposed to be used for the purposes of educating our kids is not being used for that purposes, at least, you know, in the general sense.
We live in a surreal world. I mean, we really do. But the political reality is, until the makeup of the legislature changes, it's really hard for Democrats and for Governor Hobbs to rein in this program or to reform
very
it.
True.
Interesting. All right, guys, we'll have to leave it there. Chip Scutari, Carl Gentles, thanks you both. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.